Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Unrest Podcast. I'm Carter Coyle.
I'm Madeline Green.
And I'm Caitlin Stansel.
So usually for the Sunday stories that I do, if you don't already follow us on Facebook or Instagram, every Sunday I pick a story. Literally, I'll just pick a state and Google ghost stories and pick a random story. Well, I decided to do that for Alabama, and I came up with this story about Highway 5, which is somewhere in Alabama, and holy cow, that story got a lot of people sharing it. I want to say it's like over 300 people.
And none of us three are from that area or know anything about it, but boy, there are a lot of you who have heard of this area. It's so cool.
I think it was, is it Lynn, Alabama?
A lot of people seem to have either had an experience or they've heard about it and they want to drive by and see if they can have their own experience.
And there were people who were like, oh, I grew up there. I've never heard of this. How is that possible?
Right. And it's Lynn, Alabama, and it's the Highway 5 ghost. And pretty much supposedly there's this stretch of highway that is haunted by this young girl who had maybe a scuffle with her boyfriend after prom. Supposedly she got out of the car. She's walking down the highway and she is struck and killed by a truck driver. It's a haunted highway now because supposedly she is looking for this man who killed her, and she is seen to be looking into the truck driver's windows. You know, people have seen her on the side of the highway. It's a really interesting story. That's why it caught my eye, but did not expect it to go as crazy as it did on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that was awesome. We kept getting alerts and we were texting each other like, wait, what's going on with this story?
There was quite a few people who said, you know, that they saw her or that they saw something that was unexplainable. One woman said she thought that she hit somebody, but there was no evidence that she actually did. So it's pretty cool. And maybe eventually we can get some of those people on the show.
And Madeline has actually offered to drive out by herself to the middle of Alabama.
I love Lynn, Alabama.
It's beautiful this time of year.
And probably really hot. And it's kind of cool because, you know, there's enough ghost stories around the world and here just in our country that we're able to post some little snippets of stories on Facebook and Instagram that we wouldn't necessarily cover here on the podcast. So if you don't follow us yet, go ahead and follow us there because we do have some different kind of content right there on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Bonus stories.
I'm trying to be like one of the cool kids. And I made us a TikTok as well.
What? We have a TikTok now?
Yeah, I put two stories on there. It's really funny.
And that means I need to get a TikTok.
We have 33 followers.
Hell yeah.
And 180 likes.
Life update. Carter's mom apparently deleted her TikTok, even though it was great.
Damn it.
She said,
our friend.
I know. She said it was getting too political, even though I was like, I'm pretty sure you choose what you watch. I don't know a lot about TikTok, but I think you choose what categories you want.
Yeah. The hair tutorials I watch aren't very political.
Yeah.
One of my favorites that your mom posted, Carter, was about essential workers. And she was talking about how the lady at the nail salon should be considered an essential worker because she needs to get her toes done.
So funny. Oh, Fran. Love it. Yeah, she texted me and was like, I don't think people like my birds very much. And I'm like, aww. Yeah, probably not.
She's trying to be hip and in with the kids.
She also like left Facebook for it being a little too political, except for I don't think she actually left it, because then one day she made her cover photo my ultrasound photo, and we were like, could you not, mom? Like, we haven't actually told many people yet. That was early on.
Oh no.
It was like hilarious. A Facebook faux pas. We were like, okay, just take that down for a second, thanks. Speaking of ultrasound, baby has officially lived and experienced its first hurricane/tropical storm this week.
Yeah, and Carter, you were covering it along with me for Live 5, so the baby technically was a part of the coverage as well.
Yes, I'll be able to tell him or her later that you were right there with me in the middle of the storm. It wasn't so bad downtown Charleston where I was. Thankfully, everything was pretty smooth. Not as bad of flooding as we thought, but Caitlin was north, and I think they got it a little harder there.
Yeah, so it re-strengthened to a Category 1 about 20 miles off the coast of where we were up in McClellanville, which is very northern Charleston County, right before it turns into Georgetown County. Definitely shrimp, very windy.
Town. That's a shrimp town.
Yes. A lot of the shrimpers dock off of the historic waterfront there.
Forrest Gump.
He might be down there in Lynn, Alabama, I think.
Oh, gotcha.
We did our live shots from this fisherman's boat, which was kind of fun. And it was very windy, very rainy, but fortunately it got through pretty quick. You know, that was maybe like an hour and then it was done and gone. But, you know, Myrtle Beach, kind of northern Myrtle Beach, Horry County area, Wilmington, that area, they got it pretty bad. So we were very fortunate, I think.
I've seen some pretty rough looking pictures from up in North Carolina. So yeah, there were some areas that were deep flooded.
I was talking to AJ the other day, and I said, you know, we've gotten so lucky with the last three big storms that have hit Wilmington and the Myrtle Beach area. So like Florence, Dorian, and now Isaias. And I think down here are getting a bit complacent because we've been able to miss out on the really bad stuff.
We've gotten very lucky in actual Charleston. And someone I saw posted kind of like making fun of the media, making a big deal of these storms. And I was kind of annoyed at that just because yes, there is a science obviously to the meteorology of it all, but you still never know how quickly winds can change and how it could hit here at the last second really hard. And so really, if you think about it geographically, the difference between here and a little bit north of here or North Carolina, I mean, all of it has to be taken seriously. So, you know, hey, I would much rather be out there and end up not having a ton of flooding or something cool to show because that means our properties weren't destroyed. That's fine with me. But, you know, we're just doing our jobs warning people about it because you just never know.
Well, and I think if you actually listen to their forecast, like they're not blowing it out of proportion. They're telling you literally the science behind how they're forecasting this. And they even said it may re-strengthen to a Category 1 hurricane. And that's exactly what it did. But meteorology is also a science of prediction. And the prediction isn't 100%. I mean, you just have to remember that when you're listening to the forecast.
While you were out there, did you happen to see the gray man?
I did not. And you know, that's a fortunate thing because the gray man who we're going to be talking about today, he usually only shows up if it's going to be a really devastating, massive storm. And he really likes to appear in the Pawleys Island area.
I'm so excited. I don't know anything about this.
I even have a video, so just wait.
Oh, dun, dun, I love a video.
Yes, multimedia.
Carter's going to talk about the history of naming the storms for our haunted history today, just to give you an idea of where they come up with these names. And it was funny, we did get several emails, people telling us we were not saying it correctly because they were like, oh, it's a biblical name, it's Isaiah. And literally the National Hurricane Center posted a video like with the pronunciation because I think it's an Argentinian name or it has, you know, kind of an origin in Latin America. Anyways, with hurricane season now upon us, the gray man, he's someone you want to keep an eye out for. And I like this story too, because he's not necessarily a bad person to see or a bad ghost to see right before the storm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he actually warns people of impending disaster. And if you listen to his warning, you might just come back and find that your home has been saved through the storm, that it made it through without any damage.
Ooh.
So you want to look out for this guy. You want to see him beforehand and you want to listen to him. So this legend goes back to the 1800s. And the story kind of goes that the gray man was this young man. He was wanting to travel down to Charleston to ask his love for her hand in marriage. And so he is on his horse. He wants to get down to Charleston quickly, and he decides he's going to take a shortcut. Well, if you've never been to coastal South Carolina, it's all marshy, and that marsh, it's made of this stuff called pluff mud, and if you ever step your foot in it, it's very difficult to get out of. It kind of has like this quicksand nature to it.
And it's stinky.
Yes, it's very smelly. So he's like, okay, I'm going to take this shortcut, but he decides he's going to go through the marsh, and well, that does not go very well. His horse stumbles, he falls into the marsh, and that's where he dies. The pluff mud slowly pulls him under.
Ooh, it does sound like quicksand. Yikes.
Yeah. So his lady finds out what happens to him, and she is just so devastated. She decides to go back up to that area, to the Polly's Island area, and she's, you know, just very contemplative and mourning his loss and walking the beach alone. And one night while she's out there, she comes across this man, and he's dressed all in gray, and he's just staring out into the ocean. As she gets closer, though, the man turns towards her, and she realizes she knows this face, and it is the face of her love who died in the pluff mud. So he warns her and says, "This island is not safe. You need to leave." And if you think about back then in the 1800s, you know, I think this is so crazy. And maybe they had a way to know, and I just am not aware of it. But like hurricanes back then, or even big storms, how would you know they're coming, you know? And then all of a sudden you have this like devastating Hurricane Hugo that wipes out everything. I mean, that kind of boggles my mind to not have any way to know like we do today.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, nowhere near the science. You don't have radar. So there had to be, I bet sailors might have been good at like kind of predicting a normal storm versus a hurricane, but average people inland, it would come out of nowhere and be really scary.
Well, and even if you just think about like our everyday storms during the summer, I mean, some of them can get kind of sketchy. So how do you differentiate? It'd be interesting to kind of look into that. Anyway, so she gets back to her family, and she says, she kind of relays what happened, the experience, and they decide they're going to leave the next morning. They're going to take this warning that he gave her seriously. And when they came back after the storm, their home was still there. It was intact. So her love warned her, and, you know, her family was able to survive the storm, and her home was untouched, but everything surrounding it was destroyed.
Wow.
So if you see the gray man, you want to listen to him. And there's kind of some differentiating ideas about who this person is. So like I said, the one story is about the man, the unidentified man who is trying to get down to his woman in the Charleston area to ask for her hand in marriage. But the other ideas about who this could be is Percival Polly. And then there's this other guy, Plowden Charles Jenneret Weston. That's his whole name. He was an early resident who owned a home there that's now the Pelican Inn. And then the third one I think is kind of cool, Edward Teach. Do you know who that is? Madeline, you should know this one.
I know that name, Edward Teach.
He's the founder of Union Grove.
Blackbeard.
Oh, yeah.
So some people say that the gray man looks like he's wearing gray pirate's clothing. So that's why they think that it might be Blackbeard that is warning people of impending storms. Mm-hmm. And the gray man actually got some national attention after Hurricane Hugo. There were two residents, Jim and Clara Moore, and they were interviewed on the television show Unsolved Mysteries. So they told their story about actually seeing this man on the beach and how when they waved to him, he disappeared. And their house ended up being spared throughout the storm while the homes around them were all heavily damaged.
And that was as recently as Hugo. Interesting. So, Caitlin, people are still seeing this gray man or forms of the gray man today.
Yes. So, actually, one of the earliest accounts, a woman claimed to have seen the ghost before Hurricane Hazel in 1954. And then another sighting, like I just mentioned, had happened before Hurricane Hugo in 1989. And then the most recent appearance was ahead of Hurricane Florence in 2018.
We reported in that one.
Yes. And again, Pawleys Island, you know, they close off the island to traffic when the storm is coming. And if it's expected to have a lot of storm surge, the kind of damage you can expect to see there, all the sand kind of gets pushed into the island, a lot of heavy wind and rain. You know, I mean, it's a barrier island, so it's really going to take the brunt of any storm that comes at it. So that's why it can be really dangerous if you do stay out there. And I think it was Florence that there was a house fire out there during the storm.
When was that one? 18?
Yeah, 2018.
So weren't you and I there?
I think so. Yeah, we were out there in Georgetown.
Yeah, they all kind of run together, but I do remember that.
Yeah, it was Florence, and then last year was Dorian.
Dorian.
So the Weather Channel, they also had kind of their own series covering the Gray Man in their show called American Supernatural, if you want to look that up and check it out. And then I found this video. I'm going to show it to you in just a second. But one of the people that commented on it, this lady, she said she actually saw the Gray Man before Hugo. She said he was in solid form and carrying a lantern.
I wonder how she knew it was him.
He looks gray, I guess.
covered in fluff mud.
She said she saw him in front of a house. It was being left, and the house was saved from the storm. It had no destruction. And she said that he didn't try to get out of the way while they were walking on the beach. She said, "Excuse me." And he acted like he didn't even care. Instead, he walked right in between the group of people that were there, and then he disappeared. So I guess that's how she knew it was the Gray Man. He disappeared.
It was her first clue.
And he had a lantern. Who has a lantern back then?
True. He's like, anybody know Wither Kerosene Company is?
Wither. On a side note, I either have a demon in the house or my big toenail is so sharp it keeps cutting these scratches in my legs.
Oh, those are big scratches.
Yeah.
I think it's your toenail.
No, I'm pretty sure it is, but it made me think.
The essential workers for the pedicure.
Right?
Here's the video. So there's no sound or anything, but this is like a live camera feed that they were recording during Hurricane Florence. And they're going to zoom in here, and I'll kind of describe for those listening what we see. So they zoom in, and you're kind of looking at the very end of a pier on Pawleys Island. And kind of look in the middle. You see that?
Oh, wait. Yeah, absolutely.
So this, it looks like a man. It's very translucent, but it's like a shadow of a man. And it appears in kind of the middle of the pier there. And he walks to the right.
Sure does.
He looks gray.
He does look gray. You see like his head. You see like his walking motion. Oh, they're going to zoom in more here. I didn't see this part.
I mean, it's pretty
clear. No, that's definitely a person.
And I can't figure out with all that wind and stuff how that could reflect off of anything.
And the video's at night, too, so it's not like
a shadow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Ooh, that's weird. That's pretty good. That was a good capture.
Yeah.
And that's not like the only one that's ever been captured. There are some photos. There are some other videos and stuff, So you can really kind of get down in like a rabbit hole looking into all of these. I just thought it was so interesting and, you know, obviously very relevant now with hurricane season happening. And I like that it's a ghost that warns you so he can save you. And I feel like I've heard a similar story outside of Pawleys Island, but the Gray Man, you know, is kind of synonymous with Pawleys Island. But if you live in a coastal town and you have something similar, please feel free to reach out to us, you know. We'd love to hear those stories.
Very cool, Caitlin. And that works perfectly with our haunted history today. And it is from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. That's a guess. Yes. That's a guess. Someone fact check me. Yeah, someone fact check me. Until the early 1950s, we were talking about the storm names. Well, up until the 50s, the tropical storms and hurricanes were tracked just by the year and the order that they occurred that year. But over time, they kind of realized that it was a little bit easier and maybe even more interesting to use these short, easily remembered names, written as well as spoken communication. It's quicker. It kind of reduces confusion if there's more than one tropical storm forming at the same time. And it makes it a little bit more, at least for us, you know, regular people, it's like kind of makes the storm seem more alive. It gives it a personality rather. In the past, confusion and false rumors resulted when some storm advisories would be broadcast from radio stations and they were mistaken for warnings about entirely different storms that were hundreds of miles away. So they needed kind of a way to clear these up. And that's where they came up with the idea of actually using real names. So in 1953, the United States started using female names exclusively for storms. And by 78, so quite a while later, they started using male and female names. And they were identifying the Northern Pacific storms. And then by 79, they were also doing this for storms in the Atlantic Basin, which are the ones that were impacted by here in South Carolina.
Oh my gosh, wait, I just had a thought. I don't know if this is true at all. This is just me thinking. Uh-huh. But it seems like it would be a very southeastern United States thing that we would continue to call them female names, even after they had been progressive and like switched to male and female on the West Coast.
That would be really interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they were also using male and female names or when they started that. But yeah, it does seem like maybe that was part of the progressive movement, is that these Mother Nature disastrous storms are not just female. Sometimes the men are bad too, okay?
Right. Amen, sister. Amen.
And this is something that I've been talking a lot about with a couple of our other reporters, Paola and Nick and Landon, kind of mid-storm. We were texting and chatting, and we thought it'd be kind of fun to look up. Paola wanted to know if there was any storms in the next few years named after her. There is a Hurricane Paula in a few years. There's a Nicholas in a few years, but I didn't see any Carters or Landons. So they have released the hurricane names, I think, through 2025. And you can go on and see the names and see how to pronounce them. So it is not just an arbitrary pronunciation. You know, it's actually all figured out ahead of time. So NOAA's National Hurricane Center actually does not control, though, the names of the tropical storms. Instead, there's a very strict procedure, and it's established by the World Meteorological Organization, often known as the WMO. I don't know if that's true. For Atlantic for Atlantic hurricanes, there's a list of alternating male and female names, and they use them on a six-year rotation. And the only time they really change out those names if a storm is so deadly or so costly, has such bad property damage, that they basically retire the name, and the future use of its name on a different storm just like would be inappropriate and kind of insensitive. So think Katrina
or Hugo, you
know, or Hugo. Yeah.
I just looked it up. There was a tropical storm Madeline.
Oh, how lovely. Yeah. Very close.
It was, it hit Hawaii.
Oh man. That's exactly where you'd want to go.
Yeah. In 2016.
So it's kind of fun to take a look at those names, see if there's anything close to you. But it does make sense, since it's from this World Meteorological Organization, that the names are going to be multicultural, like Isaias, and maybe pronounced differently than we would here in America. It was fun to look at some of the ones coming up and how they are supposed to be pronounced, because, you know, you look at it and think one thing, but really they'll be pronounced another way. I think next year the H is... it looks like Henry, but it has an I at the end, so it's actually Henri.
Oh, ooh, that's a good one.
So it'll be a good French storm.
Henri.
They don't use, I was reading this the other day, they don't use Q, U, X, Y, Z. So there's five letters they don't use, so there's 21 total names in rotation every year. And just because those are hard letters, I guess, to come up with, you know, non-ridiculous names. So if they have more than 21 tropical cyclones in a season, then they start using the Greek alphabet. I will now share. Like? I will now share my rendition from my sorority days of the Greek alphabet: alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu. So I could go on, but there's quite a few. So if they go through the whole thing, we're in big trouble. So anywho, those were fun. And hold on, I'm going to pull up the list just because it is kind of fun to look.
There was a Caitlin
back what?
In 2005, September.
She was that Pacific too, or was it Atlantic?
It says she was the first major hurricane to make landfall in the United States since Wilma. So, I don't remember when Wilma was 2005, so it was around then. Caitlin caused a house to be washed away.
Oh, Caitlin.
Sorry, guys.
Great man was not seen then. I'm trying to see where it was, though.
Let's see what else we've got this year. Hold up. Okay, we just had Isaias. There's Josephine, Kyle, Laura, Marco, Nana, Omar, Paulette. I kind of like Paulette. Renee.
And is the Nana one, is that Nana?
It says Nana. Yeah. Sally, Teddy, Vicky, and Wilfred. Wilfred. I'm looking for any fun ones. Next year, a Fred, an Elsa. Madeline. What is your real life haunt? I'm excited to hear.
So for this week, we decided to pick one of our followers on Facebook. So take a listen.
This week's real life haunt comes from Sally Spelling. She and her partner were visiting Cheddar Gorge in Somerset, England. Cheddar Gorge is a limestone gorge in the Mendip Hills near the village of Cheddar. The gorge is the site of the Cheddar Show Caves, where Britain's oldest complete human skeleton, known as Cheddar Man, has been found, and he is estimated to be 9,000 years old. He was found in 1903, along with some other remains that have been linked to the Upper Late Paleolithic era. This is how her story goes. Me and my partner were visiting Cheddar Gorge in Somerset. It was around twilight, early evening. We passed a stairway in the gorge that said Jacob's Ladder, so we started climbing the long staircase. It was about 300 steps, and we were about halfway up when we realized all the natural sounds had stopped. No animal sounds, the breeze in the trees had stopped, and it was just deadly silent. It was almost as if we were in a trance, as every nerve in our body was screaming to turn around and run. But still, we climbed, and by the time we reached the top, it was dark. In front of us stood what appeared to be a lighthouse tower. It was a big wooden door in a circular building with no windows, but a lookout tower on top. The door stood open and opened inwards. We climbed the spiral staircase to about halfway, and we could hear a male and female talking and laughing at the top. When we got to the top, we could still hear them, so my partner walked around one way and I the other way. We met in the middle, but we were all alone. Neither of us had passed another person. At this point, we were really freaked out and started heading back down the stairs. My partner in front, me following behind, and as he was about to step out to go down the stairs, I had visions of the door closing and leaving me locked in this tower with whatever was lurking behind the door. And to this day, I swear if he would have stepped out, that's what would have happened, and that's how strong this feeling was. But luckily he stopped, assuming he was having the same feeling as well. We headed down the stairs to the gorge, thinking we were out of whatever we had stumbled into. But as I walked down through the wooded stairway, I saw several dark shapes, about knee-high, coming in from the trees on both sides. All I can say to describe them was like a swirling, dense black cloud. Then there was one ahead of me on the steps. I stopped, and my partner, who was at this time behind me, started pushing me on down the stairs. So I just ran around it and didn't stop till we got to the bottom. When I got my breath back, I started asking him why he was pushing me. And then we heard a huge bang on the railings from above where we got on our motorbike to head home. Honestly, we weren't holding back on the gas at this point, and for those of you who don't know the area, Cheddar Gorge has hairpin bends for about 3 miles. Well, then all of a sudden, right on our tail, appeared an 18-wheeler out of nowhere. and it rode our tail the whole way back down. I was terrified that if I reached my arm backwards, I could touch the grill on the front of it. That's how close it was to us. Well, now we're going about 100 miles per hour, and there is no way a vehicle of that size could have kept up with us, but somehow it was. Finally, we came to the end of the gorge, turned on the road, and the 18-wheeler just sat there in the middle of the gorge. We got back to our campsite, and we were starting to get our heads around what had happened. Then a gust of wind, or at least that's what I'm calling it, smashed into the side of the tent and knocked me across to the other side. Then complete deadly silence again. When I finally calmed down enough to think about everything that had happened, I said, "Why the fuck were you pushing me when we were coming down those stairs?" And what he said chilled me to the bone. He said he could see black shapes coming in from the trees, and that one was actually behind him on the stairs. Now, I'd never had the chance to mention the shapes to him yet, and to hear that he had seen them as well scared me even worse. But from the moment we entered Cheddar Gorge that evening, it was like we were being pulled into something evil. I returned 3 years later, but the old tower had been destroyed and replaced with a glass tower. Now make of that what you will, but I swear to you on everything I hold dear that this is an accurate account of what happened to us that night. I've told very few people of this as it sounds unbelievable. I've actually tried to debunk it over the years as I am a cynic by nature, but I have picked this apart over the years and I can't even begin to imagine what happened that night. I just put it down to wrong place, wrong time. Such a cool story from Miss Sally. We definitely appreciate her sharing this with us and allowing us to share it with you guys.
What a cool story. Thank you all for listening and continuing to hop on. We hope that you're enjoying all of the episodes so far and that you will consider following us on Facebook or TikTok or Twitter or wherever else in the world you can find us. Insta.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
And also, you know, if you have any haunted stories that you want us to cover on the podcast, you can feel free to email those to us as well. You know, like that story in Alabama, if that's something that you're really interested in and you want to hear it here on the podcast, just let us know. You can email us at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
Another really cool thing we have is we have this phone number.
It's really neat. We've never actually mentioned it.
We have this number you can call and tell us your story. It is 843-564-2101. I don't know why we have it because no one wants to send us their story on there, but we are really, still going to
whoever uses it, like, we are going to do something very special for you. The very first person that uses it. Yeah. I don't know what yet, but you're going to get something
really cool.
It's funny because, like, people will text us and, like, email us and message us and post. But nobody wants to call.
Nobody wants to call.
And it's just a voicemail. You don't have to actually talk to us or anything.
No, we would never make you talk to us. That would be ridiculous.
Maybe we'll send you a signed group photo of us.
Yes. Oh, how special.
You're really going to want to do it now.
And a Starbucks gift card.
We love y'all. Thanks for following.
Peace be with you and you and yearn.
Unrest in peace.